We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
September is National Preparedness Month, and the U.S. has faced an unprecedented number of major disasters in the current year, from wildfires in Texas and the western states to major tornadoes in Tuscaloosa, Joplin, and elsewhere, to serious flooding along the Ohio, Mississippi, Missouri, and other rivers, Hurricane Irene, and associated flooding, even an East Coast earthquake during the past year. During this hour of focus on WILL, we'll discuss emergency preparedness at the local and campus level. Good morning. I'm Rick Atterbury, filling in as host. Our guests during this hour are John Dwyer, the Deputy Director of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, and Todd Short, Emergency Planning Lieutenant with the University of Illinois Police Department, Office of Campus Emergency Planning. As always, you're invited to participate by calling 333-9455 in the Champaign area or 1-800-222-9455 around the state, or you can submit questions online at will-talk@illinois.edu. Good morning. John, we'll start with you because it is National Preparedness Month, and what are some of the key messages you, as the Deputy Director of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, would like people to take away from NPM?
Well, it's been 10 years since the terrorist attacks of 9/11. Want to think about those who perished and those who were involved in that response. And we're not out of the woods yet. There's still people out there that are trying to disrupt our way of life in that regard. But also, if we look back in the last month or so, the amount of natural disasters we've had to deal with in our country and, you know, in areas we didn't expect, an earthquake in my home in Virginia. I'd never heard of earthquakes there on the East Coast. So disasters can happen anytime, any place. They don't discriminate, so we all need to be prepared to take care of ourselves and our families.
What are your responsibilities with the County Emergency Management Agency?
We do planning and exercising for local and state-level disasters, and we coordinate responses with the other agencies. We help bring resources to an incident, whether it's a large-scale fire or a aftermath of a tornado, or even a plane crash, or even police response.
I guess one thing for folks to remember is that I think there's folks kind of think that the Emergency Management Agency has these giant warehouses full of stuff, and you don't, but you know where the stuff is.
Yeah, that's correct. We do have some resources. We have our in our building, the County Emergency Operations Center, which can be used by any jurisdiction, whether it's the City of Champaign, the City of Urbana, the University of Illinois, or even Champaign County. That's in our building. But we also have a mobile command post that goes out on different scenes, whether it's a metro police response, or even just the other day we went out to provide a resource for the response to the missing child south of Homer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which had a happy ending.
Yes, it did.
Todd, what are some of your duties on campus?
Well, Rick, a lot of my duties actually parallel what Deputy Director Dwyer does at the county level, only more specific for the University of Illinois. A lot of my responsibilities involve the emergency planning and emergency management for all things that could theoretically or likely happen at the University of Illinois, whether that be a man-made, a natural disaster, or even a technological disaster. Fortunately, in Champaign County, we have a pretty close working relationship with those that work for the county and the cities of Champaign and Urbana. My primary responsibility in life, if you will, is to make sure that the campus, and by that I mean various colleges, schools, units, and departments, are prepared to be able to take appropriate action in the event of a crisis and or emergency situation.
So you've got multiple audiences. You've got the staff who may be well, they're more, stable, not a lot of turnover, so you can train them once and maybe be done. But you got to continually educate the students.
Well, that's one of our challenges at the campus level. We've got about 43,000 students. We've got about 13,000 faculty and staff that work on the campus at least Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, a lot of times more than that, as we all know. And it is a challenge because we're constantly educating, we're constantly training, or exercising our emergency protocols, because just like John said, we don't know when bad things may happen. We don't know if we're going to have a Virginia Tech or a Northern Illinois shooting, heaven forbid. We don't know when that F3, F4, F5 tornado may strike. We don't know if the New Madrid Fault is going to go off anytime soon or 50 years from now. So it's a constant cycle of preparedness, response, and potential recovery.
And beyond the disasters, I mean, you have to treat a large event like a football game pretty much the same way you would treat a disaster in terms of coordination with other agencies and planning for a lot of unexpected things that may happen.
The good thing about being a part of this community is that our emergency response protocols are really tested multiple times a year, whether it's unofficial St. Patrick's Day, which generally lies near the last week of February, first week of March, whether the tornado sirens are sounding like they did this April or May, forgive me, on the date when we had two on the ground in the Mohammed Seymour area, mm-hmm. moving eastbound towards the Champaign-Urbana area, and one in the sky between Tolono and Philo, or every Saturday football game when we've got 65,000 to 70,000 people in the stands and or outside tailgating. Sometimes it's more than that, depending on who we have in town that particular Saturday. So our emergency operations center, our incident command post protocols are routinely tested with the major players that are going to be involved in those responses. And we got a pretty good working relationship with those folks.
What kind of pressure does having five consecutive home football games put on you guys?
Well, I would say that it's fair to say that when we have football games, our calls for service are definitely increased. Whether they just be normal, I would say routine type of calls, being fire response calls and as well as law enforcement calls where we have crimes occurring in the campus district and or neighboring bordering areas in Champaign and Urbana. Five football games in a row definitely allows us to test our resources to a maximum level, that's for sure.
Everybody's looking forward to that sixth Saturday when they can be civilians watching games again.
I think that's a good statement, yes.
John, Todd mentioned back in April that we had multiple tornadoes. Overall, we've had a very quiet season, knock on wood, but it was a tense couple of hours when that was all going on. When the decision is made to sound the tornado warning sirens here in Champaign and Urbana, who makes that decision and what should people do?
Well, we make the decision based on the feedback from multiple sources, whether it's the National Weather Service or our trained weather spotters who are out in the areas and they see the funnel system on the ground. And then based on that, we would sound the sirens. And we need folks to remember that the sirens are for outdoor warning only. They are not a fail-safe or a device that folks should rely on. They should have a weather radio. That's the thing that everyone should have, especially here in the Midwest, because countless times we'll get calls that, I didn't hear the siren go off. Well, there's a big difference between it going off every first Tuesday of the month as a test and then having it go off in the middle of a storm when there are 40-mile-an-hour winds. You can't necessarily hear it. So pay attention to the signs on the TV with the W or the things like that. It's just getting information from multitude of sources and reacting from those.
And what does that siren mean that the public, the action that they ought to take, and how long should they take that action?
It means for them to take cover for at least 15, 20 minutes. And then if it if it resounds after that, it means stay covered. There is no all clear siren or sound. So if you hear the sirens, that means take cover.
Todd, one of the things as the school year began that you were involved in was testing the emergency alert system, but it's been improved and revised, and you even went to a different vendor. How did that work out?
Well, it worked out really well, Rick, and one of the things that we spent a lot of time on at the campus level is making sure that we have multiple mechanisms that can be used to alert the campus populace if something bad is happening. And when I say when something bad is happening, I'm specifically referring to an imminent threat to the campus populace. I'm talking specifically about an active shooter on campus. I'm talking about the tornado sirens when they have sounded and can be heard from the campus district. If we have something that poses an imminent threat, we need to have multiple ways to communicate emergency messages to people. The new service that we have now has been tested in August. We're going to do another test in October for the full campus because we wanted to allow faculty, staff, students, moms and dads the opportunity to have about 4 or 5 weeks to sign up once the school year started to make sure we had a good solid number of people that were in the system that could be alerted if something were to happen. The new system that we've got has 5 core mechanisms that are incorporated into basically one push of a button to alert people if something has happened. Text messaging certainly is number one on that list. It also simultaneously sends email to anybody with an Illinois.edu account and anybody that has been signed up by somebody that has an Illinois.edu account. Additionally, with that same keystroke, we have what's called an emergency web alert system, which is essentially a big red box that pops up on coded web pages throughout campus, main college homepages, Illinois' homepage, public affairs homepage, the University of Illinois Police Department's homepage, that says emergency. Click here for details. Once people click on that red box, the same text and the same email message that was disseminated pops up on your homepage. Additionally, one of the reasons we wanted to expand our repertoire of emergency notification avenues is because of social media. The new system that we have now automatically feeds Twitter and Facebook. The feedback that we got from the campus populace over the last couple of years indicated heavily that Facebook and Twitter needed to be integrated into the messages that we were sending out. So essentially now with one keystroke, those 5 mechanisms are simultaneously used to disseminate emergency and critical information.
Now, you touched on this, but who can sign up to receive those alerts?
It's a good question. Anybody with an Illinois.edu account can sign up to receive the alerts. They can visit emergency.illinois.edu. Once again, that's emergency.illinois.edu, and that is the registration link. If moms and dads, significant others, aunts, uncles, whatever the case may be, would like to sign up for that service, they need to contact their family member with that Illinois.edu address or their friend with the Illinois.edu address, and they have the option of putting in 3 email accounts and 3 cell phone numbers for the text and the email. So we incorporated that into the registration system to give our faculty, our staff, some students a little bit more scalability on notifications. So not only can they get notified, but if they've got moms and dads or whomever that would also like to be notified, that option is certainly there.
Now, when 30,000 messages go out simultaneously, it must put a little bit of stress on the cell phone system, but the recent tests seem to indicate it's holding up okay.
The last test indicated roughly about 98% of text messages were sent out and received by the cell phone holder in less than 12 minutes. It's pretty quick. And in the event cell phone towers do get locked up, one of the reasons we use alternate mechanisms to get that out is because cell phone towers and landlines potentially could lock up in the event of an emergency. So that's one of the reasons the email, the Facebook, the Twitter, and the web feeds are very important for us.
I want to remind our listeners that, as always, you're invited to participate. You can call in the Champaign area at 333-9455 or at 800-222-9455 outside the area. Or you can submit questions online at will-talk.illinois.edu. And we have a caller on line one from Champaign. Go ahead.
Yes, just a moment ago, the guest said that anyone with an Illinois EDU account can sign up for the alerts. And I think there's a proviso on that. Retirees can't do it through the university. They have to go to the county option, which you can get to, although I've done it, but I've now forgotten how to do it.
Well, that's something I'll make a note of. If Sites, for whatever reason, has purged your Illinois.edu account.
No, I still have an account.
You still got an account, but it wouldn't let you register.
Right.
Okay. I tell you what.
It said the RAVE did not recognize me.
Still with an active Illinois.edu account. Okay. Well, I tell you what we can do, sir. When we get offline, I can get your information. I'll personally look into that for you.
This is not about me because I managed to sign up through the county. But if you're telling the world, anybody who's a retiree, I think, is going to be in the same situation.
Okay.
We'll check that
Point
out.
Point taken.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
John, talking about the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, how large a staff does the County Emergency Management Agency have?
Full-time staff is just two of us, a director and a deputy director. But we have about 20 volunteers, of course, a volunteer PIO, and then we have multiple weather spotters for us. So,
and in full disclosure, I should have mentioned this in the opening. I am that volunteer PIO, and I should have said that during the opening. But so you guys are asked, you're tasked by federal law, by state law, by public health law, by lots of laws and just agreements to do a lot of things.
Yes, and even now, so it's resources or funding is significantly diminishing right now. I mean, if you look at the Homeland Security funds right now, they're getting cut severely. So we're having to look at different ways of coordinating resources and time and expenses to make do with what we have and look at other means of providing services to citizens.
This isn't Grandpa's civil defense system anymore.
No, we don't have the boxes of food or the water containers, or I'm trying to think of some of the other interesting civil defense things that have uncovered, the generators and things like that. But no, we don't have the same kind of resources. And it's kind of goes back to, you know, it's been 10 years since 9/11. And we haven't had a major attack on U.S. soil, so it's kind of the focus is changing, especially with the economy being the way it is. It's preparedness is kind of out of sight, out of mind until you're in, you know, Vermont right now, where they can't get food to people or water to people because the roads are taken out, so they're having to airlift items in. So for those people, preparedness is definitely on the forefront, but you know, knock on wood, we haven't had a major tornado here, but we did have one several, you know, 10 years ago or 20 years ago that wiped out, you know, Ogden or whatever and parts of Urbana. So we kind of lose sight. I guess we get complacent, and that's probably the biggest problem in the preparedness arena is being complacent and thinking, oh, it's not going to happen here. And when it does, you're kind of taken by surprise. So the best thing we could do is prepare for the things that are likely going to happen, and then also prepare for those maximum events that might happen here in Champaign.
And this month is a time when preparedness, the emergency management community, and the preparedness folks try to remind people that, you know, you need to expect to be on your own for a little while if things really fall apart.
Yes.
And a major disaster. 3 days worth of supplies is what they ask. But what are some of those supplies that people ought to think about and have available in the event that something really serious does happen?
Flashlights, food, cash. One thing about food, make sure that you're going to have something stockpiled that you really want to eat. I know we see those heater meals, but if you don't like them, you know, 3 days of that stuff can taste pretty bad. So make sure if you're going to stockpile something, it's something that you will eat or will use. So flashlights, cash. I've even heard of people taking important papers on thumb drives.
Mm-hmm.
So prescriptions, wills, any kind of financial data that you might need in an emergency to help bring stability to your life. So, you know, some people may take the extreme of having gallons and gallons of water stored someplace, but, you know, just little things, whether it's for a few hours, you know, water bottles, things like that, a little cooler. You know, for those that have diabetes, you know, those little water bottles, if you freeze them and put them in a cooler, you can keep your insulin for at least 24 to 48 hours. So it's little things and little tidbits that you can do to make it through those first 3 days.
And you have to think about what your children or other family members need.
And your pets.
Yeah, the pets. Pets, that's an interesting point, because pets became an issue around the time of Hurricane Katrina, and actually the year earlier when the four hurricanes hit Florida. People were reluctant to evacuate to shelters because they didn't have provisions for pets. They were reluctant to go to hotels because very few hotels will take pets. The thinking on that has changed since
then. Yes, and we can even look at Joplin. There have been a few fundraisers here, I believe, in Champaign to raise money for the Humane Society in Joplin, because there's no infrastructure for all the displaced animals right now. So if you're a pet owner, you should be concerned about your pet. And we work with the Red Cross as far as sheltering, especially dealing with service animals, because those folks need those animals with them. So special provisions in the shelter needs to be they need to be accommodated, because they need those. So we have a plan here with animals, whether it's using space in the Humane Society or animal control. But once again, if it's yours, if it's your animal, do your best to keep their shot information and things like that. That way there won't be any problems if they come into the shelter area, and if they don't have a certain shot, then you're not left out, or, you know, your dog or cat isn't put someplace where you can't get to them. So, I mean,
Todd, that sort of raises an issue around campus, that campus has a lot of animals for research purposes, and not only in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, but other colleges and researchers do animals. How does protecting those animals, dealing with them, figure into the campus emergency plan?
Well, we drive down the campus emergency plan to specific building emergency action plans on campus, because we're not going to necessarily articulate specific animal holding procedures in a campus plan. We want that to be done on the unit, the school, the college basis, essentially the building basis. And that's obviously a huge concern, because those research animals have special care requirements. And so one of the things that we do in the Office of Campus Emergency Planning is help facilitate the completion of these building emergency action plans on campus. Right now we've got between 75 and 100 of those that are currently in progress. It's an ongoing, living, breathing document. These documents, once they're completed, are updated annually, exercised annually. It's very important, because you can have one thing on paper, and that's great, but they also, the folks that are charged with implementing the procedures in those plans, need to know exactly what to do if in the event something happens that affects that building directly.
About how many buildings on campus eventually will have these plans completed?
Well, before I retire, Rick, my goal is to have every single building on campus to have their own specific building emergency action plan.
And then how many hundreds of buildings about is that?
We're talking 350 to 400.
A substantial amount of work is underway and will continue for a while.
Absolutely.
One of the things that has changed in the past year is that the number of security cameras on and near campus has increased dramatically in the last year. Unfortunately, some of that was driven by attacks on the campus fringes, but that's become an increasingly important tool for campuses around the country.
Absolutely, and our campus is certainly under that umbrella. We have implemented over 500 security cameras. We have physically placed over 500 security cameras to date. We started the middle of August 2010. That's a huge accomplishment for us in public safety. We have increased our staffing to 60 police officers for the U of I. And while that's a fairly decent number, it still does not allow us to have a police officer at every intersection, on every street corner, patrolling every road on campus, any day of the week, any time of the day. So these security cameras are very instrumental in our overall policing strategies. since we've been able to use these cameras on campus. It's helped increase our apprehension rates. If something bad does happen on campus, we can share information with the City of Champaign, the City of Urbana Police Departments to help in some of their investigations as well, speaking of those fringe cases that you were talking about.
And these are better cameras than they used to be.
They are. They're digital. They're not analog. Digital has a much higher quality as far as camera footage itself, so it's much easier to get identifiable suspect information if you've got a clearer picture of the suspect.
Now, the campuses in general, not just our campus, but campuses in general as places that value free speech face special challenges in dealing with people who would like to disrupt the day-to-day routine, people who may want to disrupt certain kinds of research or just make their point known because they're going to get a lot of coverage in a college community. What kind of pressures does that put on you as an emergency planner?
Well, I would say from an emergency planner and a law enforcement representative working on a major Division I research campus, we are constantly balancing First Amendment rights with state law. And we want to provide people with ample opportunity to express their views verbally, as long as those views don't physically disrupt the operation of the University of Illinois, which under state statute is technically legal. So we want to always try to keep communication lines open, Rick, because what we want to do, if at all possible, as long as it's reasonable, is allow people with points of view to come in and be able to express those points of view in a peaceful manner. If for whatever reason that peaceful manner escalates into something that becomes criminal in nature, then obviously we'd have to act on that behalf. But when we anticipate protests, when we anticipate large gatherings where, for whatever reason, there's a potential of conflict, then from an emergency planning standpoint, we will put all appropriate protocols in place, whether that's asking the county for their mobile command post, whether that's actually relocating to the campus emergency operations center and command post and joint information center to deal with a small, medium, large type of an event, long-term event. We would certainly do that.
One of the things you mentioned, that the football games are good exercises. The other kind of unpredictable things that have happened in the past couple of years, there have been a couple of widespread power outages. And what are some of the lessons that were, because it had been a long time since there had been basically a total campus power outage, and a couple of years ago we had one. What are some of the lessons that were taken away from that?
Well, if memory serves me correct, April 2009, we had our campus grid essentially go down because a substation in and around Sydney, Illinois.
You're right. It wasn't even here.
One of the big takeaways that we took with that is we are very technologically dependent. And if the site's data center goes down because we don't have power, that could interrupt a lot of our technological dependencies, like email, which is a primary way that people use to communicate throughout campus and the world, for that matter. Well, one of the big things that we learned about that power outage is that it is extremely important for people to be physically in the same room if they're going to manage a long-term event. You can conference call, you can try to email, you can try to pick up a cell phone or a landline phone, but if you're going to be managing something potentially very long-term, and that particular outage lasted about a day, more like about 12 to 14 hours, it's critical to have people operating on the same blueprint, and that's one of the reasons that we use our command post and our EOC protocols.
I happened to be actually in this building that night. They were doing a fund drive on the television side of WILL. You can't very well run a television or radio station without electricity, so people learned lessons around here, too. But John, Todd mentioned that to manage a continuing situation, it's helpful to have all the players in the room at the same time. To that end, the County Emergency Management Agency has, through some grant funding, done a total rework of the Emergency Operations Center. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have a large screen 85-inch plasma display monitor, and we have four 50-inch monitors on the wall. We took out a wall to make it more open. We also have 12 computer stations for folks to work, and then we also have two 911 dispatch computer stations for folks to man and operate. We haven't really used it in an emergency yet, which is a good thing, but we did use it for the Illinois Marathon, where we could post different things on the screen, such as we could follow the race from the squad car to see what the progress was. Then we could also monitor the weather. And then another, we could have the 911 map as well as the calls on the screen to see the general area where these calls were resulting from, and if there was a larger response needed, we could identify issues. And then towards the end of the marathon, we could also track the progress as far as opening roads and intersections and things like that. We have used it for a tabletop drill with the public health department, where we got everybody together, and it's good training. And you know, one thing why it's good to be together is you're more focused if you're in a room with the person rather than on a conference call. And it goes back to this community is we do treat a lot of things like football games or the marathon as a test, because we get to know the different responders. And if there was something, you'd be working with the same folks that were doing those events. The disaster is not the time to hand out business cards. Yeah. So,
well, who are it varies from incident to incident, but who are some of the partners who would be present in the EOC?
Representatives from the different police departments, EMS, hospitals, public health, the mass transit district, depending on if there was issues with getting people around the community, or it could be a business representative. So if we had an issue with Illinois American Water at one of their water plants with, say, an accidental chlorine release, it'd be nice to have the plant manager or a business rep that knows the operation explain some of the ins and outs of their operation. That way we can prevent any injuries to the responders as well as the public. So it varies from time to time, but generally it's going to be police, fire, EMS, emergency management, someone from the university if it involves university property. And there will be, if that call is made, there will be plenty for us to do. So, mm-hmm. Or even public works. We did activate the Emergency Operations Center for the big snowstorm that did or didn't happen, depending on your perspective. So we had the screens up with maps of Ameren's power outages. That way we could reconcile the calls we were getting and as far as who was without power, and their map that shows who had power and who didn't. So, and then we could also work with Public Works as far as which roads were being cleared or they were having problems with. So
I recall not this snowstorm, but one of the prior snowstorms where one of the duties that fell to the Emergency Management Agency and the EOC, because the parties were present, was coordinating pairing up snowplows with fire trucks. I think it was near Homer. There was a fire out in the countryside and the fire trucks couldn't get there.
Yep. So
those kind of things, you just bring people in as needed.
Yes, sir.
Well, Todd, you mentioned that and the campus itself has recently developed an emergency operations center in cooperation with the Fire Service Institute. How did that come to be?
Well, the Illinois Fire Service Institute was actually building a facility on their campus that was going to be a learning, research, and resource center for predominantly fire personnel throughout the state of Illinois, as that is one of the major fire academies in our state. And basically, Rick, through the collaboration with FSI's administrative staff and the University of Illinois, we sat down to figure out a way where we could actually utilize that space for an actual emergency operations center, an incident command post, and a joint information center. So coming in about the 11th hour, which is mm-hmm. what we did, FSI graciously took us in, saw the need for this particular space for campus operations, and we constructed that facility to be exactly those three components, an EOC, a command post, and a joint information center. So now if something bad happens that is really campus-centric, we have a place to go where all of our operations can be conducted, that being the command post. We have a place where policy decisions and joint information gathering can be collaborated, which is the Emergency Operations Center. And we've got a 100-seat auditorium where we can do actual press releases. So this space is, I call it jokingly my opus on campus because it's what I've been envisioning in my mind throughout my tenure working at the University of Illinois. And it's wonderful to be able to walk into that building, again, for a campus-centric event and be able to sit down and have all the pieces of the puzzle there and ready to go. It's a huge asset for the university. It's a huge asset for the state.
And you've had a chance to use that, used it for unofficial, as I recall.
We did. The construction of the building completed January of 2011, and we were able to break the champagne bottle on it, if you will, for the March 4th unofficial St. Patrick's Day. And so we had representatives from Illinois Liquor Control Board, fire departments, police departments, emergency medical services, Dean of Students Office, to name but a few. Being able to sit down in the same space and work collectively for what usually winds up to be a 24 to 48-hour event worked very well.
I want to remind our listeners, our guests are John Dwyer, the Deputy Director of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, and Todd Short, Emergency Planning Lieutenant with the University of Illinois Police Department Office of Campus Emergency Planning. And you can participate in the conversation by giving us a call in the Champaign area at 333-9455, outside the area at 1-800-222-9455, or you can submit questions online at will-talk@illinois.edu. Todd, one of the things that I mentioned in the opening, all of the various disasters, or some of the various disasters, can't even list all of them that have happened in the United States during the past year, and two tornadoes in particular, Tuscaloosa and Joplin, those are college communities. And what are some of the lessons that you've learned by watching how the universities and the colleges responded to those two catastrophic events?
Well, I tell you, when you have an F5 tornado that directly impacts your campus like the University of Alabama have, I have some friends and colleagues that live in and around that area, and they will tell you that that's almost a worst-case scenario. They did have a lot of damage on their campus that directly impacted what they had in their various emergency operation plans. So a lot of the planning that they had put together, some of which could not be used because Plan B and Plan C had to be executed. Mm-hmm. Some of the people at the University of Iowa that I've worked with post their flood in 2008, I believe, June of 2008, yep, will tell you that everybody should have an emergency operation plan. But everybody also needs to understand that it may not survive the first volley. That's their famous quote, which I think is quite appropriate. One of the things that we're fortunate to have in Champaign County, Rick, is mutual aid agreements with both of our cities. So if something were to happen that were to directly impact the campus, that would leave us in a spot where we may not be able to use our primary command post emergency operations center locations, we have friends on both sides of Rice Street that we would call upon, and these agreements are formally in place to be allow us to be able to still manage an incident long term. If something happens, heaven forbid, that directly destroys parts of campus, we may have to go to that Plan B and Plan C, which is when I pick up my trusty phone and call my friends at Champaign County Emergency Management and or the City of Champaign and the City of Urbana for help.
And on the reverse side of that, the campuses stepped up as resources for the community insofar as they were available, particularly in Joplin, where the campus was not badly damaged by the tornado, even though a lot of employees were seriously affected. And they were able to offer locations for shelter and staging areas and really stepped up to the plate.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And one of the things that we're lucky to have with such a large campus is a lot of buildings with a lot of space, with a lot of scalability. One of the things that we've put in place are memorandums of understanding with various campus buildings to make sure that we have places for family reception areas, for Red Cross shelter locations. Quite frankly, we have a lot of very usable space on campus that may need to be activated in the event of an emergency. If we've got a tornado where some of the residence halls may be immediately impacted, we need to have places where we can put folks in residence halls if they can't go inside of their dorms. And fortunately for us, we have those spaces available. We've outlined who's going to be working at those spaces, how many beds we've got, showers, bathrooms, all the logistical things that go with assigning spaces for a particular use. So in that case, yeah, we're very fortunate.
And I guess one of the biggest issues, if some of the dorms were taken out of commission, is feeding those residents.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of our planning processes start in housing because we've got close to 10,000 students that live in residence halls. And one of our primary concerns is to make sure that those folks are fed and watered and sheltered. So if something happens that affects those residence halls, housing has very extensive emergency plans to ensure that we can get food in. We can get water in, we can get beds, we can get cots, we can do whatever we need to do to make sure that a very large portion of our student population is taken care of.
John, one of the things that, as Todd mentioned, bringing in the community resources together that we've done in this area, in Champaign County, that some communities haven't, is that I think one of the lessons from 9/11, one of the lessons from Katrina was the importance of getting credible information out to the public in a timely fashion. Nobody can just have all those resources waiting for something to happen, but we've been able to tie public information professionals together in a network to make things happen.
Yes, we have a public information officers group that meets, what is it, bi-monthly now, and from the different jurisdictions, whether it's the city of Champaign, the city of Urbana, the county, the university. That way we can all work together because it is one community. You know, whatever affects the university is probably going to affect Champaign. It's going to affect the city of Urbana. It's going to affect the county. So we've extended relationships not just beyond the mutual aid for fire or for EMS, but also within public information. That way, if someone is trying to get a message out to the press, we can also have someone trying to get the same message out, whether it's through social media, because we are one community and we're in this together, basically. So the more people we bring as far as getting resources together and pushing out the information, the better we all are served. So.
And no one agency has the personnel to accomplish that, especially over an incident that's that lasts a long time, over, as they say in the business, multiple operational periods. But the campus has done the same thing, that there are communications professionals all over campus, but the Office of Public Engagement and Public Affairs has brought these people together.
That's exactly right, Rick. And one of the things that we have specifically included in our campus plan is a Joint Information Center annex, because we have Robin Kaler, an associate chancellor for the university who runs our public affairs office, who will tell you quite frankly that if something happens that affects Champaign County, if the tornado hits in Champaign and rolls through campus and hits Urbana before it goes back up into the air, it's got to be a multi-jurisdictional approach. And that's one of the reasons why the university is represented on the public information training group. One of the things that John and I talk about in length is such a large portion of our job is to make sure that relationships are built prior to an incident occurring. Because if those relationships are not built prior to an incident occurring, I think you're really going to be behind the eight ball when people don't know one another, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. And to lay those things out prior to an incident is so very, very important.
And that's a challenge because they're in these economic times, there have been a lot of people who have taken retirement incentive programs and other things. There are a lot of new players at this point.
There are. And one of the things that we do locally is meet generally twice a month with a Champaign County Emergency Planners Group, fire department personnel, law enforcement personnel, emergency medical services, public works, public health, to make sure that this core group is all on the same page. We know what each jurisdiction has on the plate for that week, that month. We can ask questions like, do you need help? If you need help, how many people do you need? Where do we need to put these people at? Are we going to be activating A, B, or C to make sure that these objectives are met? That increases my comfort level dramatically in the event we have a negative consequence event occur in Champaign County.
John, you're fairly new in this position, but what got you into this line of work?
I guess my background, of course, is active duty military, but I kind of liked the idea of serving my fellow citizens. So that's how I started in public health. I kind of fell into emergency planning, and then it just made sense, I guess, to serve folks and take care of them. I missed that on active duty where it felt like you had a specific mission. So rather than going to the business community, I just found something as far as public health and emergency preparedness to my liking and to my, I guess, calling, I should say. And then emergency management had a position open, and it just seemed natural to move into that position. So I've always done emergency planning, you know, in the service, whether it was for airplane crashes and civil events or whatever. So it's a great field. There are a lot of great people we work with here in Champaign. And, you know, after 9/11, you saw all the New York City Fire Department hats or the New York City Police Department hats. Well, you know, here in Champaign, we've got some, you know, some of the best policemen, firemen, EMS folks, I'd say, in the country. I guess I'm kind of jealous or zealous, I should say, but they work hard every day to take care of us, so we should appreciate it.
What have been some of the biggest surprises, I guess, maybe since moving over to be the deputy EMA director?
I guess the amount of calls, and just in a short time we've had, since I started mid-May, we had the tornado activation. We had the plane crash in Rantoul. We had an incident with the Metro team where we had to respond to a threat with a guy with a handgun, and thankfully he didn't hurt himself or hurt anybody else. And then we had the missing child earlier this week, and once again, fortunately, it resulted in a safe recovery mm-hmm. of the child. Mm-hmm. He didn't seem the least bit fazed. I don't know if the parents wanted to hug him or, you know, put him in timeout, but, you know, those have been some pretty interesting times, I guess. So,
Todd, I've never asked you that same question. What got you involved in emergency planning?
Well, that's a long story, Rick, so I'll try to make this short.
We've got 5 minutes left.
Echoing some of John's sentiments, if you choose emergency management and you choose fire service or emergency medical services or law enforcement, the military, you generally have a service mindset. And one of the things I always tell people is we're never going to be perfect. We're going to try as hard as we possibly can to make sure people are notified of events. We're going to miss some. We're going to try as hard as we possibly can to get people in an area where they're not going to be injured. We may miss some. We're going to do everything we possibly can to manage a long-term event to the best of our ability, but because we're human beings, we're fallible, we'll make a mistake along the way. One of the reasons that I really wanted to get into not only the law enforcement field but the emergency management field is that it touches so many people. There are very few things that we do on the emergency management side that does not help forge relationships with our community. I can tell you without question that since 2005, 2006, when I was switching gears a little bit and went more into the emergency management side through the ranks of the police department, that I would have never been able to know the people that I know now in 2011 and have some pretty close personal relationships through campus if I had not made this jump. One of the things that I really enjoy about emergency management is it touches so many different disciplines. And it's nice to be able to sit in a command post or an emergency operations center during large-scale disaster and help quarterback a room full of highly trained professionals who know what they're doing and make sure that a concert of effort is achieved. If you don't have that kind of a mindset going into a large-scale incident or a small-scale incident that includes multi-jurisdictions with multi-disciplines, I think the overall management of the incident, the response of the incident, can be hampered. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to get into this, because I wanted to make sure that I had my finger on that to make sure if something did happen in our county, that people would be proud of us for how we're going to respond, how we're going to plan for, how we're going to recover from something that may not be pretty to deal with at the time.
Mm-hmm. got about 2 minutes left, and I asked John this question earlier in the hour, and I'll ask it of you now, Todd. This being National Preparedness Month, what are some of the messages you'd like the campus community to make a special effort to remember this month?
Well, you know, I think, again, I'll echo some of John's sentiments because I think they were right on target. If something bad happens, we lose power, we have a tornado, New Madrid goes off, we have an active shooter, people need to have a certain preparedness plan for themselves and their family. We talk about having a 2 or 3 day kit. All those things are extremely important. People need to realize that if something bad happens in our county, resources are going to be stretched. No matter how many resources we have, we're always going to be short. That's my personal contention.
Sure.
So when that happens, we're going to need people to step up and take some responsibility for themselves and their own actions. And we're going to help as many people as we possibly can. Remain calm. If anything ever happens, the worst thing that can occur is for people to panic, lose sight of their own personal protective objectives. If they can maintain a cool head, they got a good, strong chance of being okay. And that's what we need them to do.
Thanks to both of you for being here today. Our guests have been John Dwyer, the Deputy Director of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, and Todd Short, the Emergency Planning Lieutenant with the University of Illinois Police Department Office of Campus Emergency Planning. This being National Preparedness Month, if you want to learn more about how to take care of yourself, how to take care of your family, how to maybe create some of these emergency kits that we talked of today, both at home and in the office, there are a lot of online resources that you can visit. A great place to start is to just go to ready.gov, because they've sort of compiled a lot of things there, and it's an easy-to-remember website, and it's easy for us to tell you about. So if you just go to www.ready.gov, you can go to the Red Cross website, and John Champaign County Prepares, SHAMCO Prepares, yeah, is another website that you can go to here in the county. So message in the Preparedness Month is, of course, there are a lot of people, that, like we've talked to today, here to help, but you have a little measure of that you need to take care of yourself. So thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you down the road.
People need to realize that if something bad happens in our county, resources are going to be stretched. No matter how many resources we have, we're always going to be short. That's my personal contention.
Sure.
So when that happens, we're going to need people to step up and take some responsibility for themselves and their own actions. And we're going to help as many people as we possibly can. Remain calm. If anything ever happens, the worst thing that can occur is for people to panic, lose sight of their own personal protective objectives. If they can maintain a cool head, they got a good, strong chance of being okay, and that's what we need them to do.
Thanks to both of you for being here today. Our guests have been John Dwyer, the Deputy Director of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency, and Todd Short, the Emergency Planning Lieutenant with the University of Illinois Police Department Office of Campus Emergency Planning. This being National Preparedness Month, if you want to learn more about how to take care of yourself, how to take care of your family, how to maybe create some of these emergency kits that we talked of today, both at home and in the office, there are a lot of online resources that you can visit. A great place to start is to just go to ready.gov, because they've sort of compiled a lot of things there, and it's an easy-to-remember website, and it's easy for us to tell you about. So if you just go to www.ready.gov, you can go to the Red Cross website, and John Champaign County Prepares, SHAMCO Prepares, yeah, is another website that you can go to here in the county. So message in the Preparedness Month is, of course, there are a lot of people, that, like we've talked to today, here to help, but you have a little measure of that you need to take care of yourself. So thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you down the road.
WILL programs are made possible by Amber Glenn Alzheimer's Special Care Center in Urbana. Amber Glenn incorporates residents' past routines and interests into their daily lives, engaging residents in choices and daily living patterns. More information is available at 384-0100.
And in the minute before 12 o'clock, I'm Jeff Bossert with this look at the markets at the midday. In Kansas City, hard red winter wheat for December, 741 and a quarter. That's down 19 and a quarter. December wheat in Chicago, 648 and a half, down 18 and a quarter. December corn, 663 and a half, down 22 and a quarter. March, 676 and a half, down 22 and a quarter. For May, 683 and a half, down 22 and three quarters. November soybeans, 1294 and a half, down 26. January, 1305 and three quarters, down 25 and three quarters. March, 13 and a quarter. That's down 25 and a quarter. October soybean meal, 333.90, down 6. December, 338.10, down 6. October soybean oil, 53.90, down 1.14. October live cattle, 117.15, down 2.10.